Hi, and welcome to Curious Conversations, the podcast where curiosity meets connection. Thanks for joining as we discuss captivating stories and ideas and engage in thought-provoking conversations with experts, enthusiasts, and everyday people. We hope to ignite a curious spirit as we embark on a quest for understanding one curious conversation at a time. So let's jump in this together. Welcome to the world of Curious Conversations. Hello, and welcome to Curious Conversations. We're your host, Carly and Mandy, and today we are talking about drug addiction, and specifically the movement We Do Recover. So this is maybe a hashtag that you've seen, or they do have a website. Because here on Curious Conversations, we do like to explore situations from all angles and just kind of give something personal to our listeners that they may not have known on their own.
Yeah, I love seeing that. And I've seen it a lot. And, it's just like anything else. Once you're looking at something, you're going to see more of that. But those stories, they bring a lot of hope to people. And it's uplifting to me to see that and, see the before and after and see where these people are so that you don't just have some flat stereotype.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm really excited about what we have today. But before we dive in, we do want to share with you this week's curious dish. So this is the part of our show where we dish about the most curious thing that we have seen this week. Mandy, what you got?
Okay. So I've been seeing a lot of this again, repetition here with what we see online, but I really want to see this in person a little bit more. Have you seen, I'm pretty sure you've seen these, they're little things, they're either a picture or an old fashioned brooch or something like that has human hair in it. You know what I'm talking about?
I actually do, but I mean, I got that from you. So,
yeah, I think it's really neat. So, the last one I saw was supposed to be kind of a memorial type thing, after someone died, and it had some symbols around it, and it was a hair clip, and it had the hair all woven in there. It was probably a good bit of hair. And it was like, I don't even know how you do that because it was so nice and neat.
Yes. Yeah. And you know what? It wasn't sloppy.
No.
Very clean and well put together.
I know. I don't know how to do that, but it's evidently an old tradition. And sometimes it's just like a family heirloom. It's not always because somebody died, but there are some that are specifically for that. And I got a, well, full disclosure here. I do have some hair around the house.
Oh, no. That is awesome. I'll be looking for your brooch.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Now I'm thinking, well, it was just in a bag. I could have been doing something pretty with it.
Had something cool all along. I will say, I helped a lady at one point took down a bunch of flowers that came off of a funeral wreath, and she was making jewelry out of them, to give out to family members. And I was kind of like a memorial type thing. But looking into that, and I thought, well, that's kind of cool. You can't really tell their flowers after the fact, but they were very pretty beads. But I will say, in looking into that, I discovered that there's a lot of things you can put into jewelry, and a lot of things you can make out of ashes if you have a family member that's cremated. And I thought that was kind of interesting. They make the jewelry pieces there at the crematory that you can kind of, you can purchase, but these are some things that people were just at home looking up and making for themselves.
Oh my gosh. I love that. So I don't think that my things are all artsy like that. And now I'm Well, the more I'm hearing us talk, I'm thinking this might be its own standalone podcast, episode number, I don't know what, but somewhere down the line. And also
Yeah.
maybe a side project. Maybe we should be making jewelry, right?
I know. I know. We could totally do that.
Well, what about your curious dish?
Okay, so this is something that I've been kind of looking at. Both of us have been looking at, but there is a tour that is coming close to where we are located, that I could totally get on board with. It's actually the Psychology of Serial Killers tour. And this is
Yep.
coming to the Atlanta area, Chattanooga area next month. But they're kind of all over everywhere. And the leading expert in that is it's Dr. Tolles, and she's a psychologist but also criminal expert. And so she really looks into the minds of serial killers. But not just their minds, what makes them tick and why they make the choices that they make. But also the normal, everyday, average Joe's mind and why we're so interested in things like that. And so this is just kind of a talk that you can go and it's kind of like a, I don't want to say a TED talk, it's more of like a master class around the criminal mind. And that stuff is kind of fascinating. It's things that we're all curious about. And so I just think that's going to be really, really cool.
Okay, so now I'm going to make a lame joke and call it the Ted Bundy talk.
Yes, there you go.
Oh my gosh, I'm here all night, guys.
I will not make fun of you for that, but I can't promise that anybody else
That's right. Well, yeah,
won't.
I do keep seeing that.
Yeah, it just it does sound like a very interesting event. I will say though that her fascination with that came at a really young age because she witnessed a pretty gruesome, violent murder. Of another a teenage girl. And so, it comes from a sad place that she got interested in that, but she has decided to study that and dedicate her life to that and share that with other people. And so that's it's interesting.
Okay, I didn't know all that. Like, I just keep seeing it. Like, you're talking about just seeing it online. It keeps popping up for me, but I did not know that in depth, and I didn't know her story. So, yeah, that's, I can see where she's coming from wanting to kind of have an explanation or share an explanation or delve into that a little bit more.
Yep. Yeah. Well, you can find out a little more about, what it is and a little more about her and her involvement in that on the website at psychologyofserialkillers.com. And so very interesting stuff. Pretty
Yeah,
interesting.
no doubt.
So I'm really excited about today's show. I think that it is wonderful. I always love to talk about and present a more positive side of things. And so today we're talking a little about the hashtag We Do Recover. And not just talking about it, Mandy, you've gone out and spoken with someone who that is her story. And that's really exciting. I can't wait to hear that interview. I think that it is important to have some of those positive social norms, and that is something that you'll kind of see, especially with young people, and just kind of making sure that people know the good side of things, that there are positive things to look at, and people who are able to overcome things. And so, I just really support that there are people with a story out there, and they're using that hashtag, look it up, to tell the good, to tell how they were able to cope, overcome something that maybe that's not everyone's story. That's not a lot of people's story.
Right. So I interviewed Gayla Allen, who I know personally as well. And she, I haven't always been there throughout her life, throughout her story time with these incidences that, that she went through. But she's recovered addict who has just been through everything you could imagine that goes along with addiction. And she did come out the other side to share her story with others. And she's been very candid about her past, and she was during the interview as well. And she shares a lot of that on social media. And in fact, she's even talked about writing a book about her story. And I've encouraged her to do that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's I think it would be tough. You've got to really dig in and maybe relive some things. You would definitely have to admit some fault and But just to have that redemptive story to share, and hopefully that could be used with someone, she should absolutely write a book.
Yep, definitely. I'm going to keep on her about that.
Well, listen, we're gonna talk a little more about someone who did write a book about their story of recovery. But first, I think we just jump right in. Let's listen to your interview with Gayla.
Hey there, I am talking today with Gayla Allen, and we have quite a bit to talk about. We're talking about addiction, but although there's an ugly side to that, we're talking about the good side, about coming out on the other side and about that journey. So welcome, Gayla. So
Glad to be here.
we're really glad that you wanted to come on here and talk. And you and I know each other personally already.
Oh, yeah.
So, we met early on in high school. So I've known you. You're probably one of my oldest friends, I guess.
Yeah, we've been friends forever, seems like.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know that I want to say we're the oldest friends, though. That sounds bad, right?
Makes us sound like ancient.
Yes. So we're not old, but we have known each other quite a while. I know, though, there was a long time that I didn't see you. And of course, Facebook sort of got us back in touch. And you've had quite a journey along the way, but before we get into that, I just wanted you to share a little bit about what your life looks like today.
Well, life for me today is a lot better, a lot more structure in my life. I've been setting goals and achieving them. I've learned to love myself and to love others. I've learned that I don't have to pick up and use every morning to be able to get through my day. I've changed my people and places that I hung around with. And I have my own business now. I've bought vehicles of my own and paid for them. Have a checking account, savings account, just things that I never could do in the past when I was in addiction.
Well, you know, and that's such a big thing for people. I think if you don't change your life, it's almost like a makeover,
Right.
right? Because from what I always hear people say, if you've got the same people in your life that you know, and you hate to let friends go, but if you've got the same people who are still living that lifestyle, I mean, that's hard not to pick up the lifestyle again, right?
Right. Well, once you realize that those so-called friends that you had, the only thing you had in common really was using drugs. After that, if you was to try to hang out once you've gotten clean, it wouldn't be the same because there's like you have nothing in common. You still love them, but you love them at a distance. It's
Sure.
not like you can just hang out with them every day and do the same things because the lifestyles have changed. They don't want to hear about, you getting clean and doing all this good stuff whenever they're still in their addiction and they're fighting it every day. They're still
Yeah.
learning how to deal with that every day.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, you know, once you're clean, once your life looks very different, your focus is different, then you're not relating to them as much, and they're probably not relating to you as much.
Right, because there's nothing they have in common,
Well, with social media, I see a lot of like the ugly side. You know, people are willing to share whatever, and you see these videos of people, and they just look like they're, you know, hit rock bottom. And I like to see the ones where you see afterwards that somebody has, you know, changed their life. They've gotten clean because that's sort of, the trend right now. People are sharing that, you know, hey, we do recover.
Right. A lot of people, they want to get clean, but they just don't know how to go about it. Sometimes it takes more than just them to be able to get clean. They need to have people around them that are sober and clean, a good surrounding. They need to have structure in their life. They need to set goals, even if they're small, and work from the bottom up. The main thing is to change your people and places, though, because you're not going to get clean if you still hang around those same people and go to those same places. You've also got to see and realize what your triggers are, because a lot of things trigger you And you don't think about that when you're, you know, in addiction, but when you're trying to get clean and then you're, these things are happening and that was something that might have caused you to use before or made you think about it, then it causes you to relapse.
Yeah. And that makes sense. And, you know, I think that, well, here on our podcast, we like to explore things that people are curious about, but they may not, unless they hear it from somebody, they may not ever know or understand or have that firsthand experience, with someone like in this situation where we're talking about someone who has been on drugs and then gotten clean. You know, they, if they're looking from a distance, that could be easy to judge. That could be easy to not understand. So that's why we like to explore these topics so that we can share with other people, so that they get a chance to hear something and learn about something they might not have, you know, ordinarily.
Right. I mean, it's easy to say, well, I could just stop when I wanted to, and I would do this and I would do that. But until you're in that position and you are faced with that, you don't know what you would do. It's a lot different when you're on the other side in addiction, because addiction don't discriminate. It takes the rich, the poor. It doesn't matter if you're from a nice, fancy house or from the hood or wherever. Addiction doesn't discriminate. It will take down even the president if he, you know, mean if he got mm-hmm. on it. So,
yeah, and I don't think some people understand how powerful that is.
Yeah, it's not like.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. It's not like, you know, that there's like, oh well, I'm this person or I'm that, so I won't be affected by it. You don't know that until you go through it.
Right. Exactly. So, okay, let's, we know that you're doing good and I'm excited about that. And I love every time you share, every time I see you share, and that's why you came to my mind. And so I know where you are now. I don't know everything about where you were. So I know it's probably not a good place you like to revisit. And you like to live in, hey, you've conquered something and all, but if you could just take us back and sort of give us an idea of maybe how this started, how you did you take a wrong turn? Was it the wrong people? Was it a place that you were in at the time? But if you kind of go back to how it all started, was it a specific thing or just something you kind of slipped into?
Well, back being a teenager, of course, there's a lot of teenagers who want to, you know, try stuff, you know what I mean? Because others are doing it. So they're like, hey, come on, do it. So you do it, you know, just in fun. And then before you know it, it's got a hold of you. Starting out back in high school, I started out with weed. I smoked that and then it led to bigger things. I have done cocaine. I've done crack and then eventually meth. I never shot any drugs up, but I did smoke it, snort it, eat it. It just eventually, it got worse and worse. You start out little and then it takes more and more and more. And then the next thing you know, you're doing whatever you got to do to get it. I've stolen, I've lied, I've done things that, you know, that I'm ashamed of, you know what I mean? But when you're in addiction, you'll do anything for that next high. I started out whenever, I really got into drugs as I was in an abusive relationship, and I got out of that relationship and moved in with someone else before I was divorced. So they got me for adultery. My ex-husband took my children from me. And once he did that, then I started just using drugs to kind of numb the pain. And before you know it, the drugs overtook me and it was something that spiraled out of control. I just couldn't stop after that. Because I had lost my kids, my family was mad at me. I had burned all the bridges with anybody who could have helped me. I felt like I was alone. And then I was around people who were doing it and they were providing it for me. It was easy access. So the next thing you know, I was wrapped up in it. There was no way out.
Yeah, I can see how something like that's a downward spiral, and then you're deep, like you're in this pit, and you know, how do you get back out?
Right, because I've lost jobs on top of jobs from stay up all night doing drugs and still be late for work. I've pawned vehicles to the title pawn that were paid for, 4 or 5 vehicles. I've lost them. And then when you have no job, you have no vehicle, then you have nobody. It's kind of like, what do you do? I mean, it's kinda like you just lost.
So when you got started, I guess before things went really bad in your personal life, you were just sort of exploring, right?
Yeah, just exploring.
And I hear that with people who, you know, it's not really popular to now say that certain drugs are gateway drugs, because some people have very strong feelings about like marijuana, and they, you know, people look at that differently now. And I don't want to go down that road too much in conversation, but it sounds like for you, there was something that started out with that, and that being kind of lighter, you went to heavier and heavier. Is that right?
Right. And it's not like you just wake up one morning and you say, I'm going to be a drug addict. Right. It wasn't like that. And you, like I said, you started out small with something simple as marijuana, and then it led to something else. And I can sit here all day and I can blame my addiction on things that's happened to me or other people. But until nobody can really blame anybody except for themselves, because I chose to do it. There's things that led up to me doing it. And reasons, you know, that made me try to do it to numb those feelings. But in reality, there's nobody to blame except for myself. So a lot of you can blame anybody. It's easy to do that. But in reality, until you take control of your life and then take responsibility for your actions, you're not going to get cleaned.
Well, and that, you know, when you're saying that, it's such a powerful thing too, to have ownership of the mistakes that we make and say, all right, I can't blame anybody anymore. I've got to own that I did this. I've got to figure out how to get out of this. I've got to figure out how to put my life back together. That, you know, adulting, as we say, and it's not easy, but I think that's like the beginning stage of it, wouldn't you say, is when you own it for what you've done?
Yes. When you accept that you have a problem, and you face it head on instead of taking drugs and doing things to numb the feeling, then you can say you're on the road to recovery. But you've got to have a good support system. You've got to reach out. A lot of times when you're in addiction, it's easy for you to withdraw from your family and friends and people because you don't want them to see you that way. It's like you're embarrassed of the way you are, and it hurts you, and you know you're hurting others, and you don't really mean to. But you are. I mean, because everything you do affects somebody else one way or another.
That's right. It does. And unfortunately, whether it's drugs or something else, when we're making really poor decisions, it affects the people we love and that who love us, and just day to day living, you know. And I can imagine that's how you felt, like you had hurt people, and maybe the people surrounding you and in your circle at that time had hurt you. And I think that's what a lot of bad choices come from, is from pain.
Right.
I do.
I mean, well, I flew all the way to California to try to get clean. I went to a rehab in California. Great program. I was doing good. I came back and decided I'll just stop by and see a friend and tell him how good I'm doing. And that's where I got right back into the same thing. It was kind of like wasted trip.
Gosh, that's a long way from Georgia.
Yeah, it is. Especially when you're by yourself, you've never been on a plane and you're flying out there to somewhere where you don't know anybody, which is a good thing. You don't know anybody, so you don't know where to get it from.
Right. That's true. Well, I know that you've been real open to share photos too, of where you were and where you are now. And can you talk a little bit about that? I know you had some weight loss.
Yeah, when I was in addiction, I was weighing about 98 pounds. My face was sunk in. I looked like I was dead. I looked like I was probably about 80 or 90 years old. I didn't realize that I looked that bad. I thought that I looked normal. Did I like what I see when I looked in the mirror? No, I hated that person. I hated the way I looked, but I didn't realize that everybody was like, you've lost so much weight. And you know, and I blamed it on, oh, well, I have a high metabolism, you know what I mean? I eat, you know, it was always an excuse as to the way I looked. And now I didn't realize I looked that bad. So when I get my photos out of when I was in addiction, I'm like, what was I thinking? What part of waking up every morning and doing drugs is normal? That's insanity, doing the same thing expecting a different result. I hated the way I looked. I've gained some weight back, a good bit of weight, probably most I've ever weighed. But I actually feel good about myself. I don't look like I'm sick. I don't look I'm dying. I look healthy, and I'd rather look this way than the way I did. So I keep those pictures as a reminder when I need to look back. If I ever, you know, forget my way, then I look at those pictures and it reminds me of the way I don't want to look and the way I don't want to be.
Yeah, I totally get that. They're powerful. When I see, every time I see your pictures, I want to share with everybody your stories, because you know, I know you, and I knew you before addiction, and I've known you afterwards, and I wasn't there in your life, you know, during that time really, but I just I know, I can tell from the things that you post just how hard you've worked, and you know, I see your success, and I'm always sharing about your business. And the great thing is that it's been continued success. It's not, you know, that I know how hard that is to sustain that and to continue with it and not just have hit a high and then you hit a low again.
Well, the thing with me is I was incarcerated in jail for 2.5 months because I got busted for drugs, and it was at Christmas, Thanksgiving, and New Year's. And well, I had a lot of time to sit in there and think, and I'm like, not knowing if I'm going to get out, what's going to happen, if I'm going to be sent to prison. My first grandbaby was just going to be born. So at Christmas time, I sent my kids and my mom and my husband and them all a Christmas card. And I said, my promise to you is to stay clean. And what kind of mama would I be if I didn't? This was my second chance. This is the only chance I had. The first time I messed it up and I lost my kids, but there was no way I was going to lose them again. So my promise to them was to stay clean. And that's what I'm doing. I do that every day, not just for them, but for myself and for my family, because I love them so much and I have so much to be thankful for. And going to jail and then getting into drug court, I had 18 months drug court, 6 months aftercare, which was a very tough program, but I am thankful to God that I went to jail and I got in trouble and then I got in drug court, because without that, I probably wouldn't have never made it on my own. I needed that structure.
I hear about drug court and aftercare and that sort of thing. For people who don't know what that's really like, or just have an assumption of what that's like, can you share a little bit about those things, kind of what the structure is?
The drug court, when I started out, we had to go to group 4 days a week and go to court on Fridays. We had to take a drug test every morning at 8 a.m. We had to go to meetings, AA and NA meetings, at least 3 times a week. We had a surveillance officer come out to our house, could go through everything in our house, could drug test us, breathalyzer. I had to text my surveillance officer every day, everywhere I went. When I first got in drug court, I had to text him, I'm leaving my house, I'm going to the store, what store I was at, when I was leaving the store, when I got back home. He would call me in the middle of the morning, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. If I didn't answer the phone, I would be in trouble. Luckily, him being that strict and having those things that I had to do and be on time, that's the main thing in drug court, is to be on time and do what you're told and never lie to them, because they know already. If they ask you, they already know. A lot of people try to slide by in drug court and say, well, I'm going just so I can get by and not have to go to prison. If you don't really want it, there's no reason for you to even go, because it's not going to work. And I see so many people that I was in drug court with that did so good and was doing good and graduated, and they've went right back to the same thing. And that really breaks my heart, because I see the good in those people and I know that they got it in them. It's just they didn't do the steps. You know, there's steps that you got to take, and if you don't do those steps, then you'll never make it. But I do thank drug court, and I thank the people in drug court for saving my life, because they did.
Yeah, I'm thinking at the time, you know, when we make bad choices and we don't really want anybody to know, and you just kind of want to disappear in that. But once you're on the other side of whatever you're doing in life, and you look back and you think, gosh, you know, maybe I couldn't stand those people or I couldn't stand the situation, but that's what saved me. That's what got me out of the situation I was in.
Right. It, being in drug court, the thing was when I started seeing myself doing these things that I could do and making progress and changing my life and good things happening, you know, how and all the people that had supporting me, that made me feel so good inside. It was like it gave me a goal. It gave me something to work towards. Self-care and self-love. If you can't love yourself, how can you love somebody else? And when I graduated, standing up there, I got to apologize to all my family and my children. And they were on the front row and the second row. And to see them looking at me and being so proud of me and them crying and me crying. And I was like, I'm finally doing it. You know what I'm saying? They were proud of me, my kids, even though I put them through a lot of stuff. And I, you know, they didn't deserve all that. And my family, to know that I got all that back just by doing the right thing and by leaving the drugs alone, that is something to work. You'd be proud of. And I'm very proud of me for that.
Oh yeah. That's definitely something to be proud of. I mean, and how powerful is that to be able to apologize? Cause to me, apologies are very, very powerful. When I've received it and when I've given it, you know, cause I've made some pretty bad mistakes in my life. And when I've worked up the courage to come in and admit those mistakes to somebody, you know, that, well, it's hard work. it is.
Right.
But also when I've had people come to me that, you know, maybe I even had a wall up, like, I don't want to hear your excuses. I don't want to hear whatever, but you know, you recognize truth, you recognize honesty when you hear it. And, when somebody gets raw like that with their emotions and lets their wall down to apologize for something that they've caused, you know, that's powerful because there's some people that will never do that in this life. They'll never accept an apology and they'll never give an apology and they're missing out.
Yeah. The hardest thing to do is to admit that you were wrong and that you've hurt somebody. One of the 12 steps they offer in AA, or they tell you, you have to work the steps. One of the 12 steps is making amends. Sometimes making it all, you know, making amends is not only for the other person, it's for yourself. Whether they accept it or not is a different story. Even if they don't, you got to make amends for yourself. And once you start making those amends and apologizing to these people, you can get on with your life, because otherwise it's going to eat you up for the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's really true. I used to, and I'm not saying I've got it down perfectly, but I used to really wasn't too crazy about the idea of forgiveness, that you're just supposed to forgive people, because that felt like I was giving in to them or something, or I was saying that what they did was okay. But, you know, I kind of learned the hard way that it's that once you make that decision inside, even if you're never around them again, just to, you know, say, hey, I'm going to forgive them because I'm not going to let things eat me up, you know, and forgiveness is different in different situations, but certainly with somebody that you love, that you want back in your life, for them to say, admit something and say, hey, I made a mistake and I don't want to do this anymore. And I've, you know, made these changes to show that I'm different. I mean, that's really powerful. I'm proud of you for that. And I'm proud for your family and loved ones for that too. And, so how long have you been, I guess, on the flip side, on the good side, over the fence with everything?
I'm working on 7 years, and November will be 7 years, November the 13th.
Gosh, that's
will be 7 years clean. And that's coming from a 20 plus year addiction off and on.
That's amazing. You know, that's a long time, and I don't know what challenges you might have had along the way with that, but to be able to sit here and say this far along, you've stayed clean, you've kept your intention right. And, you know, I'm sure it's like anything else. It's not that you don't ever have any kind of thought or anything. I think that's what people think sometimes, is that you flipped a switch with addiction. And, you know, there's a lot of different forms of addiction, and I don't think any of it, you flip a switch and you don't have any feelings anymore. It's just how you look at that and how you just, you know, the choices you make. Is that what you would say too?
Yes, it's how you react to that. I still have using dreams, even though I've been clean in my 7 years. I still have using dreams, and I wake up and I'm nervous and I'm scared to death. But the best part about it is when I wake up, I realize that I didn't do it. But I still have those dreams, and I'm not sure how long, if they ever go away or whatever, because I would think by now they would stop, but they don't. You still have them. I mean, it may be for something you've seen off TV or something like that, or you see a friend or somebody you see or anything like that. So you have to learn how to deal with that. Like I said, that's maybe a trigger sometimes, you know what I'm saying? There's so much different things that can be triggers you don't realize. Going by a certain store that you used to go to, going by a certain house, a certain area, seeing certain people. It just, you know what I mean? There's a lot of things that can be triggers. So you've got to learn how to recognize those triggers and deal with them.
Yeah. And I'm thinking now you have so many good things in your life and you're always sharing about your family and about your, owning your own business, and you're a big sharer. And so when everybody sees that, and when you see yourself, hey, my life is great, you know, why would I want to mess this up? You know, you have all the things to live for and to live in a healthy way for. And I think a lot of people, maybe they can't see that horizon, you know, maybe they can't see that, that life could look differently.
Right. Because they hadn't learned how to deal with it. The best thing is having people say, you're an inspiration to me. You know how good that makes me feel to know that something I say or something I do, or maybe how I've overcome drugs, is helping somebody else. If I can help just one person in this world to realize that there is life after addiction, then that makes me feel so good inside, because I wish that I would have had someone like that whenever I was in my addiction.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you're on the right path of sharing, and, you know, I hope this gets the word out too and gets your story out there. And, you talked before about, you know, going to jail and everything. And I was going to ask you before you said that, if you had, as they say, you know, hit rock bottom, and for some people they have to hit rock bottom multiple times and then something just sort of clicks. Would you call that, when you went to jail, would you call that your rock bottom, or were there multiple situations?
Well, there's multiple situations where I've been homeless before and had to sleep on people's couches that didn't probably want me there. I've had to beg for food, just crazy stuff. But the jail, the 2.5 months in jail, that broke me. I know a lot of people talk about jailhouse religion, but I found God when I was in there, because right then, I felt like there was nobody else. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if I was going to come home, if my husband was going to leave me, because we had fought so many times about my addiction. I didn't know if my kids were going to be there for me, if I was going to get to see my first grandbaby. There's so many things. So when I was in there, I mean, the only person I had left was to God, you know, and I found him and I asked him to forgive me. I'm not perfect by no means, but without God, I wouldn't have never made it either.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question is, you know, because I do know from what you share, you know, what your beliefs are. And I wanted you to be able to share about that as well, because I knew that was a big part of it.
Yeah. I thank God every morning, every night when I lay down and when I wake up in the morning, that I've got my life back and I've got my family and my kids and I've got support and I've got my business. I mean, sometimes it's kind of scary when everything's going so good and everything, that kind of seems like it's a setup. And I feel bad for others who are still in addiction, or just other people in general, because if they're having problems in their life, because I feel like, why can't they have good things happen to them? But I realize that it's in the choices that you make. Nobody's going to do anything for you. You've got to learn to do it yourself, and you've got to learn to realize and to set goals. I mean, even like I said, even if they're small goals, you've got to set these things. You've got to wake up every morning and want better.
Yeah, because if I'm hearing you correctly, you know, it wasn't that something wonderful was just placed in front of you and you had that hand up. You were in a really low spot, and you made the choice to change your life. You made the choice to step out and to, and to make that change. And even though you were leaning on God, and even though I'm sure you had people help you along the way, when you were in that dark place, you decided, hey, this is, I mean, that's the first step, right? Is you making the choice to live differently.
Yeah. I mean, when I'm 40 something years old, I'm like, look, I can't, I ain't got a whole lot longer in this lifetime. I don't want the rest of my life to be like this. You know, I've got to do something. I've got to make some changes.
Yeah.
I'll be 51 tomorrow, and I'm surprised I even made it that far. It's a wonder I ain't dead or wound up in the ditch somewhere, you know, from all the drugs I've done and people getting stuff from people I didn't even know. You know, there's no telling what they put in it. And I'm just lucky that God gave me a second chance, because I could very well not be here to see you tomorrow.
Absolutely. And a happy early birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think when you look back at the, you know, dangerous decisions that we make, you think, oh my gosh, you know, I can count the times that I feel like God was there for me. And I think, you know, why? But I'm so thankful, because some of the decisions were really dumb on my part, and were really kind of asking for it. And yet.
Oh, yeah. Can't blame nobody but myself, actually.
Right. Yes, I can relate from that point. You have to be thankful and say that you're thankful and share, so that you can hopefully help other people. Well, let me ask you this last thing. If there's something, one thing or a couple of things that you would like to share with someone who's struggling, is there, you've given a lot of advice just in what you've said, but is there a specific thing you would like to share with somebody who's in the place that you used to be in?
Never be afraid to ask for help. It doesn't show that you're weak. Go to a meeting, get in as many meetings as you can, surround yourself with people who are clean and sober, change your friends, change the people you hang around in the places. I know that they're your friends, but once you distance yourself from them, you'll realize that things do get better. Friends are not friends if they're getting you high. There are good people, like I said, that are in addiction, and I have met some good people. I'm not saying all of them are bad. But just make better choices for yourself, because if you don't take care of you, nobody else is going to.
Well, I thank you for being so open, and you know, I think you're a lot to people, and I think you're really good. That's why I wanted you on here. I think you're really good at sharing your story and being relatable to people, and you know, on both sides. And you know, you've got an amazing story to share, and a lot of good, hopeful things for people. And so I hope this gets shared with a lot of those folks. And of course, obviously, I'm going to want you to share with your people, and you know who needs to be reached. And you never know who's going to be touched, even when you hate to say it, but you sort of give up on people sometimes, and you think they're never going to listen. And you don't know when that one thing they hear is going to be something that sparks, you know, just like you were in that place. And at that particular time, you thought, I don't want to live like this anymore.
Right. It's always nice to knowing that you got somebody that still loves you and still cares about you, no matter how far down the bad road that you've been and how far an addiction you are, because so many people give up on people. And so then it makes people give up on themselves. And that's sad.
It is sad. And I thank you again. And I really always, you're one of my favorite people I follow, even though I've known you for so long. I follow your page because it's uplifting. And I know that that's what your intention is.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people say, I just love you. You inspire me. You know, and you're such a go-getter. And, you know, you've got a lot of things that you're doing, and you're upbeat. You know what I mean? It wasn't always like that, but I am thankful that I can be that way and be an inspiration to somebody else. Because maybe just, like you said, one thing that I can share or say that might save somebody else, that makes me feel good inside, because that's one of my main goals.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking me.
Wow, that was that was powerful. I mean, what a beautiful story. redemption, overcoming, just finding your power within, and that was fascinating.
I just think that she hit on all the different things that I know are what most people think of as struggle, but a struggle's individualized by what you went through personally and how that affected you, and maybe even why you got to that place. There's a lot of different reasons why people get into addiction. So I love that she was open about sharing every aspect of that.
Yeah, what a story of hope. If there's someone out there that struggles with addiction, or I know a lot of times the pain of it falls on family members that are watching their loved ones struggle, and they're not really sure what to do, how to help. And so just to have that hope of, hey, there are stories out there of absolute recovery and moving on to greater things. One person that we're looking at and talking with is Herb Steverson. So, he wrote a couple of books. One is Head Case, and that's what I'm reading now. And that's his general story of overcoming that harsh reality of, gosh, I have fallen right into the pit of addiction, and trying to claw your way out of that. He has another book, Junk Box Diaries, that I've got on my to be read next list. But that he literally talks his way through a day. It's like, hanging out with someone who has a strong addiction and what they go through in a day, minute to minute. And so those are both fascinating stories. And we've been in talks with him, and he's gonna come and be on our podcast. And so we'll have that coming up. But I definitely love that he might have a different perspective, being a man and coming from a busier place than Gala. I think that would be fascinating to kind of hear them back to back and see what's going on between the two.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know that if you take 10 people's story of addiction, there's going to be so many similarities. But there's really those when they dig deep and they share, basically their soul and where they're coming from in their personal life. Each story is so different, and I can't wait to hear about his story and his journey.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we appreciate you listening in today. Be sure to join us next week and look for some really fun things that we've got coming up.
Well, listen, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, where we post exclusive content, contests, and so much more. And of course, you can keep up with our episodes through Podbean or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And as always, if you have a story that sparks curiosity or you have something that you want us to talk about, just shoot us an email to ourcuriouspodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.